We're holding on Nindalad Ahmed Bey's nine lines from the bottom. We talking about the different Chilefus, and in particular, we said that when it comes to the windpipe, we said that if there is missing from it up to an Isser Ha'Talki, ad Isser Ha'Talki, up to an Isser Ha'Talki, which is a coin, a Roman coin, then the animal is still kosher. So now we always have the question, when you say that's up to, ad such and such, does it mean up to and including, or up to and not including? Ad the chlal, or ad the loy ad the chlal, as the Gemara calls it. So now we're going to discuss that point. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Kisela, when we talk about that there's a certain thing that can be missing up to a sella, what it means is the Kisela, when it's the size of a sella, kiyos in the kisela, then it's the equivalent of being above a sella, meaning that then it would be a problem. What is the case? So Rashi explains that earlier in the parak we had a machlokas with Shammai b'Sivil about a skull. The original machlokas was about the skull of a person. If there's a hole in it, if there's some of the bone missing, up to what point is it still metame ba'oihel? So we said that there was machlokas v'shama b'shilo about how large the hole is, that then, in other words, it would be considered the person wouldn't survive that, and therefore the skull is not considered complete anymore. We learned earlier in the parak also that they have the same machlokas as far as Tereifa. Now, Rashi explains that the Gemara tells us in Bechoris, so we'll learn it in a few months, Bez Hashem, that the amount, so the Shammai says the size of a certain, of the hole made by a certain kind of drill that they used in the Bez Mikdash. Bez Hillel says when it's a large enough piece that if a living person were missing that amount of a skull, then it would kill him. And the Gemara explains that that means Kisela. So now when Rav Nachman is saying, Kisela, if it's exactly the size of a sella, then it would have the same din as larger than a sella. So therefore, as far as an animal, it would be treifa, and as far as a person, we would say that the skull is no longer metame bar. So that's point of Rashi. Tosfos brings up a couple of possibilities, which is we're going to learn further on Nunheyom and Beis. We're going to talk about the case of an animal that lost its skin. We mentioned it briefly in the Mishnah. We had Machlokas, Reb Meir and the Chachamim, whether an animal, gluda, an animal that has lost its skin is kosher or not. And the Gemara is going to talk about in that connection an amount of a sella being left. So that would be another case where sella comes up. Tosfos points out in both of those cases, it doesn't actually say the word ad. So therefore, what would be the discussion anyway? But sometimes we find that it'll say an amount. It'll say kesella, and it really means ad kesella. It means up to. So then Tosfos goes on and discusses it. But they end up saying another explanation would be, we learned a few daphim ago, that you had a case involving when the peritoneum, the layer that covers the stomachs, that covers the inside the body, that covers the stomachs and whatnot, the basar achoifas, roivakeres, as we call it, the flesh that covers most of the keres, of the first stomach of the animal. We said that if there's a rip in it, the length of a tefach, then the animal is straight. And we said also that if the hole is wound, then we would be able to stretch it out and be the size of a tefach. We talked about it over there, but Rashi versus Tosfos, whether it means that a sella itself has a diameter, not a diameter, a circumference of two tefachim, so that when you stretch out the hole, you have one tefach on each side of it, or does it mean that the circumference of it is one tefach, and that would be the, and then it means, in other words, if you were to measure around it, string and then take that string and put it along the rip part, whatever the case. The point is, we use the word a sella over there. So now Tosfos says that would be another possibility. What we mean over here, if it's exactly a sella, it's the equivalent of being more than a sella, and therefore it would be tereifa. So the Gemara says, and similarly, says Rav Nachman, ke'iser, similarly in our Mishnah, when we said if there's a piece missing of the windpipe, the size of an iser, that would also be kiyosim ke'iser, then the same thing would be, it would be as if it's larger than an iser, meaning that it would be treifa. In other words, Rav Nachman wants you to know, in both these cases, we mention a figure, we mention the size of a coin, we don't mean only if it's larger than that coin, does the din change? We mean that even if it's exactly the size of that coin, the din changes. Al-Makasav Rav Nachman, ad-balei ad-bachlal, which shows that Rav Nachman holds that when the Mishnah says in these kinds of scenarios, when it says ad up to, it means ad veloy ad bechlal. It means up to, but not including the actual thing. So, meaning, in other words, here we're saying that if it's missing up to an iser, then it's fine. So Rav Nachman would say ad ki iser haitalki, it said in the Mishnah. So Rav Nachman understands it doesn't mean up to and including an iser haitalki. It means up to just below that amount. So once it reaches an iser haitalki, then already it would be tereifa. Okay. So the Gemara says eser rova l'Rav Nachman. So Rava says that I have to Rav Nachman that I have a contradiction. I'll give you an example. Says Rava, where it seems that the word ad in a Mishnah means ve'ad b'chlal, means including the figure that it says there. Namely, like this. We know that a bed is able to become tame. In fact, a bed is able to become tame with even tumas nidras with the tuma of a zog sitting or lying on it, because it's meant for sitting or lying on. And of course, it's makabel tuma, tumas mess, and all other kinds of tumas. And there can be a scenario where if it becomes tame, you have to toivel it. We have in the Mishnayos for Yotzei, for example, Hitzel Boyos Amita, where you're toiveling a bed in a mitzvah. Now, a bed being a big thing and a little bit hard to handle, so what you might do is you have a rope attached to the side of the bed to be able to use as a handle for this purpose. The Mishnah in Kalim explains that actually there would be two things. If you have a rope sticking out from the side of the bed, you can use it for that purpose as a handle if you have to travel the bed. In addition, also the Mishnah talks about that you can use a short rope over there when you have your Korban Pesach. We know that before the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they had to buy their Korban Pesach at least 4 days in advance, and then they tied it to the sides of their bed, to the legs of their beds. And the Mitzrayim would challenge them, and they would explain to the Mitzrayim that we're going to be slaughtering your God, etc., etc. In later times, that kind of thing is not required. You can buy your Korban Pesach Erev Pesach itself if you want. Nevertheless, it seems that a popular minhag was sometimes to do that, to buy your Korban Pesach a few days in advance and tie it to your bed and in memory of the way they did it in Mitzrayim. So you could use a short rope that sticks out of the bed. You could use for that kind of purpose as well. So the Mishnah says, Chevel Ayotzim in Amita. When you have a piece of rope that sticks out of the bed, ab chamisha tfachim, if it's up to 5 tfachim in length, tahor, then the rope is tame. Ropes by themselves are not going to be metabol tumah, because a rope is not any of those kinds of things that the way we have the rope over here actually points out that the way they made beds in those days, the typical way of making a bed, you had a wooden frame, then you would weave ropes back and forth through holes in the bed frame, and that would make the surface on which you put the mattress. And now we're saying if you have some of that rope left over that sticks out outside the bed. Now, rope in and of itself is not macabre trauma. But here, once it becomes part of the bed, then it is. But now we're saying if you have less than 5 tefachim sticking out of the bed, then that part goes back to the rule of a regular rope that is not macabre trauma. Because up to 5 tefachim, you can't really use it for anything useful. So now Rava says, my lav chamisha kilamata. Now, when the Mishnah says up to 5 tefachim, on the face of it, doesn't mean that also if it's exactly 5 tefachim, it's also not makabel tumah. So you see an example over there that ad means va'ab b'chlal. It means including the 5 tefachim. And so that's throughout the sugya, there's one of the mafoshim, the Tiferes Yachav, explains over and over, we're going to be asking that doesn't ad mean ad v'ad b'chlal, and each time the Gemara is going to explain, not necessarily. The premise of the question each time is that we assume that halofa works for the most part in whole units, unless otherwise specified. So here, if the point is, you're going to say that 5 tefachim has a different din, but 4.99 tefachim has a different din, there's not makabel tumah, and 4.98, etc., so then it would mean, in other words, we're not dealing with whole units. Whereas if we say that it means up to and including 5, then it means fine, we're talking in whole units, and even 5 tefachim is in fact not makabel tumah yet. So therefore that would show that you have ad v'ad b'chlal. And Rav Nachman answers, long, chamisha kilamayla. No, what it means is that 5 tefachim, it means that up to 5 tefachim, it would be tahor. But once you reach 5 tefachim, then in fact it is makabel tumah together with the bed. So the Rambam actually has a different shita that the Rambam understands. The Rashash explains that the Rambam learns that what it means is ad hamisha means up to the fifth tefach. In other words, the Rambam would hold anything above four tefachim is makabel chuma, anything within the fifth tefach. Whatever the case, hamisha klamayla, the five tefachim or the fifth tefach, is in fact considered like the larger amounts. And the idea is because when it's less than five tefachim wrong, then you can't do anything useful with it. You can't tie the Korban Pesach to the bed, and you can't use it as a handle when you need to lift up the bed and lower it into a mikveh. But once you reach five tefachim, well, according to the Rambam, four tefachim plus, then you are able to. So no proof over there that ad means va'ad b'chlal. Okay, Rava continues, Toshma, let's continue, let's bring another proof though. The Mishnah there continues, mechamisha va'ad asara, if the length is from five until ten tefachim, tome, then the rope is makabel chuma, because then again you have, when it's between those lengths, five and ten tefachim, then it's useful for those purposes that we said before. As opposed to, we're going to say soon, if it's above ten tefachim, then it's not useful for that kind of purpose. At that point, you would probably just cut off the end, and once you plan to cut it off, then already it's considered as though you did. So again, my lava sort of kilamata. Now, again, says Rava, doesn't it mean that ten tefachim is like anything below it? That it means, in other words, that if it's eight tefachim or eight and a fraction, then it's still makabel chuma together with the bed. So if the bed becomes tomei, then so does that extra length of rope. Nine tefachim also, 9.5, 9.6, etc., all the way up to 9.93, and even 10. It would still be makabel chuma. Only when it's 10.1, then it wouldn't be makabel chuma anymore. Again, on the theory that halacha deals with whole units. And again, Rav Nachman answers, why asara kilamayla? No, it means that 10 is like the amounts above it. So 10 already wouldn't be makabel chuma, and 10.1 wouldn't be makabel chuma either. So fine, Rav Nachman says, yes, halacha deals with whole numbers, but so when it comes to 10 being a whole number, that's ready. It has a different status, and that has the same din as 10.1 and 10.2 and so forth. And the idea is because you're not going to keep it that way. You're just going to cut it off that extra length because it doesn't really have a use for it. Especially when it comes to tying the Korban Pesach to it, you're not going to. You want the Korban to stay fairly close to the bed. And when it comes to lowering it into the mikveh, also a too long rope, you're not going to be able to hold on to the end of the rope too far away from the bed. Then it's more likely to snap. So what are you going to do? You're going to hold it of necessity closer to the bed between the five and ten tefachim that we said. So therefore, Rav Nachman says in both those cases, you have no reason to think that when it says five and when it says ten, that five should be the same as the values below it. And then you should say, ad-ba-ad-ba-flau. No, it means that five and ten are respectively like the values above them. So again, up to but not including five tefachim is not makabel chuma with the bed, because it doesn't really have a use. Between five and just under ten tefachim is makabel chuma, because there it has those uses. Ten and above is not makabel chuma, because you're eventually going to chop it off. So the Gemara says, fine, let's bring another proof. Toshma, let's try to bring another proof against Rav Nachman. Here we're going to be talking about as far as klei cheres. So we know the Torah tells us that klei cheres, earthenware kalim, are able to be makabel chuma. Now, if a kli cheres breaks, sometimes we say, Tosfos has a long discussion, actually, about it on the next Amud, sometimes we say that once a kli cheres breaks, then it's not makabel, never again makabel chuma. But sometimes what we say is when you have a leftover piece of it, which still has a function, then that piece can still be makabel chuma. Tosfos on the next Amud, there's a Tosfos that takes up most of the next Amud, that goes into a good deal of detail when we say that you need yichadoi, that you set it aside for that purpose, versus when not, and when do we say that, and so when is it makabel chuma or not? In any case, the idea is that sometimes you have a kli cheres breaks, but you still have shards of it that are still useful for holding liquids or other such things like they did before. So a Mishnah says, adakin shel kli cheres, very small kli cheres, chain. So when they're first made, then they're makabel chuma. And their bottoms, so if the sides of them break and all you have left is the bottom, the Dofne Seam or the walls of them, so the other way around, a piece from the wall of the Keli. In all those cases, Yoshvin Shaloi Masuma. In all those cases, they're able to sit on the ground without being supported by something else. So sometimes you'll have a shard of earthenware where the only way you can have it hold something is if you hold it up, if you put something else on the side to hold it upright. That kind will not be Makabel Tova. But we're talking about where it by itself, it has a flat bottom, or in the case of the side of it, it's flat enough that it's able to sit there on a surface and not tilt this way and that. So then it's still Makabel Tova. Shi'urin b'chdei sichas katam. Then the shear of how much of a shard is still makabel tuma is when you have is when it's large enough to be able to hold enough oil to be able to smear the smallest limb of a newborn baby. Less than that, that shear comes up in Hilchos Shabbos as well. Less than that amount of oil you wouldn't bother with. But once you have enough oil they used to smear oil on their skin all the time. In those days, they would help keep the skin supple and soft. It would serve as protection against insects and against sunburn and whatever. So therefore, so if you have enough there, if this keli can hold enough oil to be able to smear on the littlest body part, the little toe of a newborn baby, then if that's considered a significant amount enough of oil, and therefore the broken piece of the keli also has significance, and therefore is also makabel tuma. Tosfos, by the way, discusses over here when we have the word hain in this Mishnah, that implies that even if the keli is intact, it needs to hold at least that amount in order to be makabel tuma. But Tosfos wonders why that should be. Be that as it may, the point is we're not focusing on the whole keli right now. Let's focus for the moment on this point about the broken parts of it, the bottoms or the sides. So if it will hold at least that amount, then it's still makabel tuma. The ad lug. Now the Mishnah says that applies if the original keli held up to a lug. Namely, if it holds more than a lug, then we're going to continue quoting from the Mishnah. Then it has other shielding. So again, my lav lug kilamata. Shouldn't we assume that in this case, it means a lug has the same din as anything below it. In other words, so you have this keli holds a smaller amount, larger and larger and larger, up to and including a lug, then the shear would be. Now, if this keli breaks, then once you have a piece of it, as long as a piece of it that's large enough to hold kadesh sichas cotton would still be makabel tuma. And in that case, again, that would mean ad va'ad v'chlal. I mean, when we say up to a lug, means including a lug itself. Again, on the theory that the Chachamim are telling us figures in whole units, a lug would be a whole unit. 0.99 of a lug would not be. And the answer is lug kilamayla. No, it means that actually a lug is like the next larger size. Namely, the Mishnah is going to go on to tell us that if the keli originally, if the original intact keli held more than a lug up to, and we're going to give a figure, then the size for its broken pieces is different. The point being, in other words, when you have a small keli, originally to begin with, the original keli was small. So then if you have a broken piece of it, the walls of it are also fairly thin because it was a small keli to begin with. So therefore you're going to keep such a keli, you'll keep such a fragment of a keli and use it to hold a small amount of oil or something. But if it came from a bigger keli, it's really not going to be worthwhile. The bottom of it is going to be so much larger that a small amount of oil that you keep in it would just sweat out and you wouldn't be able to get much use out of it anyway. And the walls of it are much thicker. So therefore it wouldn't be really be worth it to keep such a fragment around just to hold that tiny amount of oil. So now we're saying if the original keli held up to, and we're saying now, but not including a lug, then a broken piece of it, as long as it holds, kedei sichas katan, then it's still makabel tuma. But a lug itself would have a different amount. Okay, the Gemara says Tashna. Well, let's prove from the next part of the Mishnah. Milug va'ad sa. If the original keli held anywhere from a lug until a sa. Now, there are four lugim in a kav, and there are six kavim in a sa. So therefore, so now we're talking a range of 24 folds. So if the original keli held anywhere from a lug up to a sa, v'reviz. Then if it breaks, then the amount that it would be useful to keep around the broken pieces would be if they can hold a revius or more. Now, again, my lab saw kilometer. Shouldn't we assume that, again, it means from a lobe up to a saw and including a saw, and that would be ad vandafal? And the answer is, again, log saw kilometer. No, it means a saw already has it. If it originally held a saw, then it would be a different amount, as the mission is going to go on to say. So the Gemara says, Toshma, Misaw Vad Sasai. You know, if the original Keli held anywhere from a saw until two saw, Bahatsi Lug, then the amount that the fragment has to be able to hold to still be Makabal Chuma is larger. Now it would be a half a lug. Before we said a Revius, which is a quarter of a lug, now we're saying a half a lug, twice as much. So again, my love of Sasayan Filamata, doesn't that mean that if it holds two saw, then it also has the same din as if it held between one and two saw? And again, the answer is Lois, Sasayan Filamata. No, Sasayan already has a different rule, and then it's going to be a larger amount, which the Mishnah goes on to say, it actually quotes from the continuation of the Mishnah, then the fragment would have to hold a full lug in order for it to be worth keeping around and therefore still be Makabal Chuma. So in all these cases, we can say that ad means veloy ad b'chal, it doesn't include the next larger figure. Okay, the Gemara asks, v'atanya lug kilamata, saw kilamata, sasayim kilamata. We learn clearly in a braisa that explains the Mishnah that no, in each of these cases, when it contains exactly a lug, that it has the din as the one below it. Meaning, in other words, so not like we would want to answer to defend Rav Nachman that when it holds a lug, then it goes with the next larger amount, that one lug would be the equivalent of above one lug, but rather one lug has the din of exactly like a lug. So if the original Keli held up to and including a lug, and now it breaks, now if you have a fragment that holds enough, could this sichas cotton, large enough to be able to smear oil on the amount of oil to smear on the little toe of a newborn baby, then kilamata, then the keli that originally held a lug would still have that same din, and that would be the figure. Saw kilamata. Similarly, if it holds a saw, then it's like the ones below it, meaning when it's above a lug up to a saw, it has the same din. And sasayim kilamata, and when it holds sasayim, the two saw, then it has the same din as what's below it, from more than one saw until two saw. So in other words, the Mishnah is talking about ad b'chlal in each of these cases. So, and that contradicts, and then that contradicts Rav Nachman, who's been saying that ad means veloy ad b'chlal. So the answer is hosam l'chumdi. The answer is when it comes to these tlecheres, the reason there, it's true, we do say ad b'chlal, the braisa makes that clear, but the reason is, so over there we go l'chumra, and we say that each time we're gonna go with the smaller figure. So in other words, we are saying ad v'ad v'chlal, but what that results in is a chumrah. So in other words, a keli that used to hold a lug, now a fragment of it is only kedei sichas eva cotton, and not like if it held above a lug, where there it has to hold at least a revius in order to still be makabel chum. So in each of these cases, then, the braisa is telling us, the braisa is clarifying for us in the Mishnah that it means ad v'ad v'chlal, which comes out a chumrah. So now when it comes to Rav Nachman's din, then we're also, so what we're going to say is Rav Nachman is saying that whenever it says ad, don't always say that it means ad. So now we're saying that Rav Nachman doesn't mean that it's always going to be ad v'loy ad v'flal. What he means is in each case you have to go l'chumrah. In the case of these kalim, saying that lug or saw or sasayim is ad v'ad v'chlal results in a chum. That namely, you say that a kalim that used to hold a lug, a smaller fragment of it, and will now still be makabel chum. Here, when it comes to the windpipe, we would say that ad v'loy ad v'chlal results in a chumra, because you're saying that if it's up to but not including an iser, then the animal is still kosher, but once you reach an iser, then anybody gets tracy. So it's not a blanket statement that ad means veloy ad b'chlal, like we said before, but rather sometimes it'll mean ad v'ad b'chlal, sometimes ad veloy ad b'chlal, whichever one results in a chumrah. Which Tosfos points out, in that case, then now the Gemara doesn't really need the answers anymore that we were saying, that, uh, that, that, uh, we said as far as the rope and as far as his kalim and all, and we had to say that each time ad means that each time ad necessarily means ad b'chlal, not necessarily, it'll really depend whether that results in a greater chumrah or not. Which would mean, in other words, for example, as far as the rope with the bed, we would say up to 5 tfachim, it's tahar, meaning up to but not including 5 tfachim itself, it would already be tahar. On the other hand, when we said from 5 to 10, it's tameh, but above 10, it's tahar. That would specifically above 10, but if it's exactly 10, then it would still be tameh. So it would come out, in other words, with the rope, it would mean that anything from 5 to 10, inclusive on both sides, is still makabel tameh. 4.99 would not, and 10.01 would not, and 10.1 would not, but anything between those would. Tosfos points out, usually the Gemara for that kind of thing would say Ella. Rather, we need to change our mind and we need to explain differently. Here it doesn't do that. Tosfos in some other places explains that the Gemara uses Ella when it quoted something from an Amora before. Now it wants to say, you know what, not like he said, but until now we weren't quoting, we had Rava's questions, and now we have the sum of the Gemara asking questions on Rav Nachman, but we didn't really have anybody explicitly saying, we didn't have an Amora, a named Amora specifically saying, it means ad b'chlal in these cases, and therefore the Gemara doesn't have to say Ella. Okay, so the bottom line is we always go to Chumrah. As in fact, whenever the Chachamim give a shiur, a certain minimum or maximum amount for something, so anything involving Issur, anything involving Tumah, etc., lahachmer, then we always have to be machmer. It means the actual number that they say means anything larger than that is also going to be tameh or posel or whatever. Now one point is then, it means, in other words, a point of Rashi that we said at the start of the discussion, we said Rav Nachman's din about Sela was about if an animal is included in the case where an animal is missing a size, that piece from its skull. So that would mean, in other words, that we have to measure exactly. So we have exactly a selah. But for example, when we have when we said before, machlokas v'shamah v'silul, if there's a piece of a selah size missing from a person's skull, then it's not matame ba'oil anymore. It would actually have to be that we it means a selah itself would still be matame ba'oil, and only if it's above a selah would it not be. So kol shiur chachamim lahachmer, all shiurim of chachamim, we always have to be machmer, whichever one, whether we say ad b'chlal or ad b'loy ad b'chlal, whichever one results in a chumrah. Is going to be what we mean. With the exception of the case of a gris involving blood stains. We're going to learn in the Sefer Nidah next year, Be'ez Hashem, that there are cases where a woman finds a blood stain on her clothing or on her body or whatever, and we have to figure out whether it's dam nidah or not. So one thing is, we say in many cases, we look at the size of the stain, and we figure out whether it's the size of a gris. A gris is a type of bean. The poskim disagree on the exact size of it. The Alter Rebbe's shitta is it's around the size of a dime, maybe a little bit smaller. There are poskim who hold it's more about the size of a penny. Whatever the case, if it's smaller than that, if it's up to, and now we're saying including that size, then not necessarily dam nida, then we can attribute it that it may have been a louse or a bed bug or something that was killed, which the Chachamim figured out that the amount of blood that comes out of such a creature is maximum a gris. So now, says Rabbo, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that when we talk about a blood stain the size of a gris, then it's a lahokel, then that kind of thing is lahokel. So then what we say is that if it's exactly the size of a gris, then the woman is still tahar, and only if it's larger than a gris, only if it's larger than a gris is she tahar. Because more than that, you can't attribute to a bug, and therefore we have to say that at least some of it must have come from her. We'll learn in Besach Nidah, Be'ez Hashem, more details about that. There can be cases where the blood is in fact attributable to other parts of her body, or even from things from outside of her body, etc. But in that case, we say ad the chlal, so up to and including a gris, it can still be makel, but when it comes to, but in all other cases, when we say ad, means v'loy ad, means ad the chlal, or ad v'loy ad the chlal, whichever one results in a chuppah. Tosfos brings up a point that you have, the Gemara discusses this point in Brachos as well, as far as the times for davening. And there it actually comes out a pula on the face of it that we say, for example, tefillos hashachar, Rabbi Yehuda says, ad arashos, up to 4 hours, and it means you can daven even at the end of four hours, but that means a chumra as well means you still have to daven. Fine, so the Gemara says dekanami. In fact, we can show that in the case, that in the word ad, that in this word, with this word ad, it's going to depend on context. It's going to depend whether... And actually, by the way, points out that ksamim, the whole tuma of ksamim themselves is midrabanan. Midaraisa, a woman is tuma nida only if we know the, only if she actually felt the blood flow from her body. He or she didn't. She just found in the morning, she woke up in the morning, for example, and found a blood stain on her clothing. Midaraisa, she wouldn't be tuma anyhow. The whole concept of ksamim is midrabanan. We're going to learn about it in detail. In Masechta Nida, Bez Hashem said, therefore, they can be maital and say that a gris is fine and only over a gris is a problem. Okay, the Gemara says dekanami. In fact, you can show from the wording itself of that ad is going to depend on context. Where as long as either way it comes out lachora, the katoni ala dahi. Because again, in that Mishnah, going back to the matter of the rope sticking out of the bed, chamisha kilamayla, asara kilamata. That a braisa explicitly says that 5 is like above it, meaning 5 and above is going to be chomping. Asara kilamata, and 10 is going to be like below it, meaning like what we just said, from 5 until 10, inclusive on both sides, is going to be makabel chomah. Less than 5 not, so 4.9 will not. Above 10, 10.1 will not, but anything between those will, because it includes both 5 and 10. So we see. So if we were going to say that ad consistently means ad befal or v'lay ad befal, then it would be inconsistent at one end or the other. But now we're saying it's not, because the consistency is not what the actual meaning of ad, but rather the fact that we always judge it l'chumra, with the exception we said of this business of a blood stain the size of a gris.
Just
into that. Okay. Next. Getting back to Tchefus, the Mishnah had said nitalat choyl, another case where an animal is kosher, is where the spleen was removed. Because like we talked about yesterday, the spleen is not a vital organ. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Mishmei Derava, Lo Shanu Ela Nital. Now that would only apply if the choyl, if the spleen was removed. So it's completely missing from the animal. Whether it's missing congenitally, or whether it was cut out at some point or whatever, Avol, but Rav Avida says, Nikav, but if you have a hole in the, spleen, Trefa, then he says that would make the animal, that would make the animal Trefa. The Chassam Sofer points out an interesting point. You look in at the layout of the organs inside the animal's body, the spleen lies right on top of the keres, of the first stomach. So therefore, Rav Avira is telling us if there's a hole in the spleen, eventually it's going to affect the keres, and therefore it's going to become truth. However, the Gemara says, "Masiv Rav Yosef bar Oven, v'tem Rav Yosef bar Zvida." Rav Yosef bar Oven, or some say Rav Yosef bar Zvida. Question then. In the next paragraph, we're going to talk about cases of an animal in the mother's womb. So the animal, the baby animal, when you shech the mother with the baby still inside, then the baby becomes mutter as well by virtue of the shechita of its mother. It's called ben kua. We're going to learn about it in detail in the next parak. So now, the Mishnah describes there, suppose that while the baby was still in the womb, the person reached in there and cut off a piece of the unborn baby and then left it in there and then shechted the mother. Mutter ba'achila, that piece would be mutter to eat. Because when you shech the mother, in other words, you don't consider it eva menachai, because the shechita of the mother with this piece still being inside the womb is still considered to be part of the mother, and therefore that piece is kosher. On the other hand, what if you were to cut off a piece of the mother itself, or of any animal itself, before you shecht it? If you cut off a piece and you reached inside the animal and cut off a piece of the spleen or a piece of the kidneys, now both of those, we said in the Mishnah, if the animal is missing the spleen or missing kidneys, then it's still kosher. But fine, nevertheless, so it doesn't make the animal terefa, but nevertheless, also b'achila, that piece later on, when you shecht the animal, is going to be also to eat. It's going to be also to eat because it's Eivim and Achai. And it doesn't become mutter by the fact that you shech the animal because it's already detached from it, even though it's still lying inside the animal's body cavity. Now, the implication is Habehemah Brucha Chaga. Now, the implication is the animal itself, as a whole, will be mutter. So you see, in other words, now, not the postures, we're not talking about that you cut off the whole spleen, when it's a choisef minat chol or minat choyes, you cut off some of the spleen or some of the kidneys, and we're saying the animal is, the implication is that the animal is nevertheless culture. But if you were going to tell me, Rabbi Avira, that if you have a hole in the that if you have a hole in the spleen, then already it makes the animal trefa. Then all the more so if you cut off a piece of it. In any case, cutting involves, of course, making a hole first and then making a hole bigger and bigger until you cut off a piece. So wouldn't that contradict Rabbi Avira? So the Gemara says, no, who are dindakul behemah nami asira. In fact, in a case like that, you might well say that the animal as a whole is kosher. Is trefa. You might well say that the animal as a whole is trefa. You're gonna say, fine, if the spleen as a whole is gone, then the animal is still kosher. But you could say, in fact, like Rabbi Avira says, when you have a hole or a piece cut off, then it is in fact trefa, because Rashi says what's going to happen is now the animal is going to be more and more hurting and then get weaker and weaker and therefore that's going to make it trefa. But why does the Mishnah say it that way? Because since the beginning of the Mishnah wants to tell you that in the case when you cut off a piece of the unborn baby, it's all mutter to eat, and there's no issur of even achai. Tananami sefer also ba'achila. So therefore, the sefer also mentions the expression that the piece that you cut off is also ba'achila, but not to imply that only that piece is osur. As Eivman Achai, in fact, it can mean that the whole animal is in fact osur, not because of Eivman Achai, but because now you made it trefa by cutting the spleen. That's one answer. Or another answer you could give, nikav l'chud, the next of l'chud, there's a difference between whether it has a puncture or whether it's cut. You could say that a puncture in the spleen is even more painful and then more distressful for the animal than a cut in it, and therefore a hole, as Rabbi Avira says, may well make it trefa, but a cut would not. So you could after all learn the Mishnah in the straightforward way, cut off a piece of the spleen, and nevertheless the animal is still conscious. But if we were to puncture a hole in it, then in fact it would be trefa. Some Mephoshim do not have that girsa of the last line. The Beis Yosef brings that the Beis Yosef brings, but apparently the Tur did not have that second lashon, which would mean, in other words, that the Gemara is just leaving it with the original answer. If a piece of the spleen was cut off, it would in fact be trefa. Okay, we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara actually that there is going to be a difference in that regard between different parts of spleen. Meanwhile, though, okay, the Mishnah had said nitulak floyus. The Mishnah had said another case is that where the animal is kosher is where the kidneys are missing. So the Gemara says, so now the Gemara is going to bring another one of the Shev Shmaitza, another one of the 70 statements of Amiroyim about dinim of Shreifus that we talked about at the beginning of the Perek, which we said the first Mishnah of our Perek had alluded to them with the word Zahaklal. We also talked about at the beginning of the Perek that Chonad Veda Bishmal counts them among the list of 18 Treifas. Whatever the case, they are in fact Treifa, and now we're going to discuss one of them in more detail. So the Gemara says, Amar Rochish Bapop and Mishmeidim, Loksa Bakoyafas, if an animal is damaged or sick in one of its kidneys, so Rashi gives the example, that means if it's full of pus. Other Mephoshim talk about there can be other possibilities of what loksa means exactly, but it means that there's something wrong with the kidney. Another point that Mephoshim bring up, we talked about previously in the Gemara, where sometimes you have flesh or muscle or whatever of the animal that necrotizes and starts dying and becoming gangrenous. So here we can, for example, we learned about the other day about a lung of the animal that seemed to be normal but then when they picked it up, it fell apart, showing, in other words, that it deteriorated and couldn't hold itself together anymore, and it was declared trefa. So now some of the Farshim say that loksa bakoya would mean the same kind of a thing over here. It means that the kidney has gotten infected or gangrenous or whatever you want to call it, and therefore is not holding itself together properly. So now, says Rochish Papa, trefa. Then the animal would be trefa as a result of that. Amrid Marava, however, they said in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, Ruhudim Matoy Lakusa, Lamokim, however, that would only apply if this lepusa, this infection or this necrosis or whatever, only goes all the way to the place of the choritz. Choretz literally, means a gourd. So a kidney is shaped like a kidney, like a kidney bean. It has in the middle of it, one side of it is rounded, it's smoothly rounded. The other side of it has a notch in the middle of it. And that's where the ureter comes out of the kidney over there. And there you have various other things that, various other structures that go into the kidney over there. You know, the various blood vessels and whatnot that go in there, and that kind of, it's called the hilum in medicalese, it's called the hilum of the kidney. That's considered the main functional area of the kidney, and therefore if that part has this loxa, is full of pus or necrosis or whatever, then the animal is going to be treifa. So the Gemara says the heifa makom choretz. Well, where exactly is that place of the choretz? L'chivra, the tusi masni, it means the white stuff underneath the loins of the animal. Namely, that area, the hilum, the entryway of the kidney over there has a large area that's full of fat, that's full of and covered with fat. That would be the area, that's the area of the kidney that we're talking about. In other words, the question would be basically, Shlomo Klugel explains, the question is basically, what do you mean? Maybe we can look for ourselves and see where the forest is. Do we mean that is that only the beginning of it, or it has to penetrate deeply? So it's only if it penetrates deeply where you have this white fat and where this white fatty area goes into. So only when the infection or whatever it is reaches all the way there, then the animal will be traced. Okay, so the Gemara continues, so now we've had two statements. We've had two statements involving organs in the body that we said are not vital organs, and therefore if they're missing, the animal is still kosher, the spleen and the kidneys. But in both of them, we're saying that if they're missing, the animal is kosher. But if there's something defective with them, then we're saying then the animal will be treif. In the case of the kidney, Rav Avira had said when there's a hole in it. In the case of the spleen, Rav Avira said when there's a hole in it. And in the case of the kidneys, Rochesh Bar Papa said when there's an infection or necrosis or whatever in it. So what's the halacha? I'm Rav Nachmanu. Shel tino l'chulu trufoid in my rabba. So Rav Nachmanu says, I asked all the rabbanim who specialize in hilchos treifas in Eretz Yisrael. These are rabbanim who learned hilchos treifas and were proficient in it, and they're the ones who deal with shailas on hilchos treifas. But Amrubi, so they told me, the halacha is like rochus papa about the kidney, that if you have an infection that affects the hilum of the kidney, then the animal is treifa. The less hilchos Rav Avira, but the halacha is not like Rav Avira in that if the spleen has a hole in it, then the animal is treifa. And the Gemara says, Rav Avira nam, and actually even Rav Avira's din. And again, this is in parenthesis in the video because it's not. What do you mean? It doesn't really mean anything. So it means loya moran. When do we say the halacha is not like Rav Avira? Ela b'kolshei, only if the hole is in the thin side of the spleen. You look at a spleen, you'll find one end of it is thicker and one end of it is thinner. So in the thin end, a hole doesn't create any problems. There's the idea that the post can bring, and like we said before, the spleen lies on top of the keret. So one way of defining it, in fact, is that what do we consider the thick part of it would actually be the part that lies directly on the keres, would be the definition of the thick side. So if the hole is in the thin side, meaning the part that's not direct, meaning pointed out, the part that's not directly on the keres, then it's fine. Alva v'sulche. But if the hole is in the thick side of the spleen, treifa, then the animal would be treifa. And it goes nicely with what we learned before from the Chassam Sofer, that the idea is a hole over there will eventually affect the keres, and therefore the part that lies on the keres is going to be the part that creates a problem. The post can deal in more detail with exactly, I mean, so you have the thick part, has a thin part as well. After all, it tapers off to the sides, and the thin part has a bit of a thicker part as well, because it thickens. But we're talking, so therefore we have to define what we mean by the thin part and the thick part. And again, it would be the part that lies on the, keres versus that doesn't. However, the Gemara continues, a hole, even there, even in the thick part, a hole doesn't necessarily make a trefa. The e is shtayrbe, ka'uri dinar zahab. However, if you have it, the hole doesn't go all the way through, and there's still the thickness of a gold dinar of intact spleen below the hole, shera, then the animal is still kosher. What is the thickness of a dinar zahab? So most of the poskim say we really don't know. So therefore, so the Rashba, I think, talks about, that the hole doesn't go through the majority of the spleen, then you're fine. Once it goes through more than half the spleen, then you have to be concerned that maybe you don't have the thickness of a dinar zahav. The Rabbi Anderson Ibershitz actually, goes and tries to find a size for it based on other Gemaras. He says that the thickness of a gold dinar would be about a third of an etzva. So an etzva is defined in halacha as between about 3/4 of an inch and an inch, according to the different poskim. So then he says that the thickness of a gold dinar would be approximately 1/3 of that. So you're talking about somewhere between about a third and then somewhere between about a quarter and a third of an inch. Many Achronim disagree with that, though, and say we can't really rely on that, and where exactly does he get that from? So, in other words, the halacha is sort of like Rabbi Avida, but not really. Rabbi Avida had said any hole in the spleen makes the animal trefa. Now we're saying that, no, in the thin side, a hole won't make it trefa at all. In the thick side, it will, but only if the hole goes so far through it that you don't have a gold dinner left of the thickness of the spleen intact. If the hole is any shallower than that, then it will be kosher. Okay. Getting back to the matter of the kidney now, we said that the animal is kosher if it's missing its kidneys, but we said that if there's a leukosa, if there's a defect in the kidney, as we said, an infection or necrosis or something, then the animal is today. So now, so the Gemara continues, Amid Marava, they said in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, anything that makes the animal trefa, if it happens with the lung, which we learned various details about it earlier in the parrot, kosher bakulia, parallel things, if they happen with the kidneys, the animal would still be kosher. And they say sharin nekas posel bereya, because here's an example, a hole in the lung is posel, as we learned extensively earlier in the parrot. Kosher bakulia, but a hole in the kidney is not a problem. We haven't said so far that anything about a hole in the kidney. All we talked about is where the kidneys are removed versus we said where there's a leukosa, where there's an infection or something. A hole in the kidney apparently is not a problem. So you see that other things that make the animal trefa, if they happen to the lungs, parallel things are fine with the kidneys. And the Gemara points out the poskim hey, the kosher bereya, kosher bakulia, all the more so when we have things that are kosher, and in fact, we have, by the way, we learned previously, we learned yesterday, for example, we said that there was a certain family where they would injure the animal in the kolia, in the kidney, mochel kolia, they would hit the kolia, the kathli, and thereby kill the animal, but we said that's still not considered a trefa. We did talk about over there, actually, the Urzarua said that actually a hole in the kidney would be trefa, and it's only a blow on the kidney that would be kosher, so then he'd have to explain our Gemara accordingly, that we're not talking about holes, we're talking about other kinds of problems with the surface of the kidney. Okay, and the Gemara says, "V'choshken heicha the kosher bereya, kosher bakolya." All the more so, cases where something is kosher when it happens to the lung, all the more so then it would be kosher if a parallel thing happens to the kidney. So the Gemara says, "Master for Rav Tanchoma." But the Rav Tanchoma questions that: "Is this a general rule? Is this an absolute rule?" Varing Mugla, consider the case we have pus in the organ. The kosher bereya, now if you have such a thing on the lung, we learned earlier in the parrot that would be kosher. We had a case earlier in our parrot where we had simchi, we had growths, even large growths on the surface of the lung, on the on the membranes of the on the membranes of the lung, and he said that nevertheless the animal was still kosher, even though they were quite large, and there we were talking about even whether they're full of pus, whether they're hard, etc. And nevertheless, we said it's still kosher. But possible kuya, but we just said if the kidney is infected and has pus in it, then it would be trefa. So you see that. So you see, says Reb Tanfoma, that you have a case of something that's kosher by the lungs and fossil by the and treif by the kidneys. So what are you telling me? So what are you telling me as a blanket statement? Anything that would be kosher by the lungs, is definitely kosher by the kidneys. And he was another example. Vare mayim zaken. He was another example. When you have clear fluid, dikshedim hocha v'hocha. In both cases, whether you find such fluid in the lung or whether you find it in the kidney, then the animal would still be kosher. So Rashi says, I don't understand what the question is. We never said that. We never said there can't be a case that's kosher in both cases. Hosefus explains the question is, when we have we can have clear fluid in there, but that what causes that clear fluid? Sometimes it can be a lacusa, sometimes it can be some kind of infection or something in the organ. So sometimes you'll have pus there, but sometimes instead you'll have clear water, that clear fluid that builds up a little. Nevertheless, we're still saying it's kosher by the kulia, so we don't say because pus would make it treifa, therefore clear fluid also does. So you see, in other words, that you can't compare one thing to another. When we say clear fluid, obviously we don't mean urine that's forming in the kidney. What we mean is, in other words, that you have a buildup of fluid inside the tissues of something, edema or something like that, fluid that doesn't normally belong there, but nevertheless it doesn't make the animal treifa. So as Tosfos is saying, then the point of the question is that we're saying that pus will make it treifa, but fluid will not. So you see, therefore, that you can't really compare that you really can't compare one thing to another. So Ella Amar Rav Asher. So Rav Asher says treifas from adamas la'adadi. You're trying to compare things of treifas, one body part to another, or even one type of fluid to another. No, as we learned before, einem treifas zugayim lozu. We don't say that treifas, this one seems to resemble this one, and therefore what applies to one should apply to the other. Because we have an example, as we learned a few days ago, as we're going to learn in more detail in the next parak, about the legs of an animal. There's a certain point of the animal's leg where if it's cut, then it's treifa because it affects the tzomus hagidim. It affects the bundle of ligaments that are necessary to the animal's life. As opposed to, then you can have you cut the leg at a different point and it'll still be kosher, even though it's above that point even. So we see it. So now you would think to say, well, for tzomus hagidim is damaged, the animal is treifa. How much more so if the whole segment of a leg that has tzomus hagidim is completely cut off? And nevertheless, we don't say that. So Rav Asher says, you see, therefore, you can't really compare one kind of treifa to another. So each one has to be dealt with on its own merits. So therefore, yes, we can well say that we can well say that pus on the sur that we can well say then that a sack of some kind, or whatever, a bubble with pus in it on the surface of the lung is not going to make it treifa, but on the surface of the kidney, but when the kidney is not on the surface, we said if it goes deep into the kidney, into the hilum, then it will make it treifa. And similarly, there's no contradiction over this business of seal fluid versus pus. However, the Gemara says, mind zaken shaden, now that when we're saying that seal fluid in the, that clear fluid in the kidney, the animal would still be kosher. That would be shloyamon el betzili. That means that they actually have to be clear fluid. Aval achiri, but if it's cloudy, then that already treifa. Then already is going to be treifa. So Balamur and many other Rishonim explain that this is specific to the kidney. When we said that the lungs it'll be kosher, even when there's pus in it, so if it's kosher with pus, then certainly kosher with cloudy fluid. But with the kidney, if the liquid is cloudy, and then it's gonna be treifa. But the chitzili nami lo yamor, and even if the liquid is clear, also we don't say that's kosher. Ela b'lo siriyah, only b'lo siriyah, only if that liquid doesn't smell bad. Aval siriyah, but if it smells bad, treifa, then it would also be treifa. In each of these cases, again, when it affects the hilum, the notch of the kidney. The Gemara continues. Suppose that the kidney shrank in size. So then the animal can still be kosher, but only the daka ad kapul, when it comes to a small animal, the goat, then it's kosher only if the kidney is now at least the size of a bean. What is the size of a bean? So the post can tell us that Rashi mentions later in the Sefta that it means it's less than half the size of a kazayas. So as long as it's still that size, then it's kosher. But any smaller than that, then it will be treifa. And so similarly, the gasa, what about with a large animal, another bananis, then it would be only if it reaches the size of an average size grape, then it would still be kosher, but any smaller than that would be posse. How you define the size of an average size grape, so the Rishonim talk about details within that. You also have the question, what if it's exactly the size of a pool or exactly the size of a grape? You also have a point. There are Mephoshim who explain that when we say the size of a grape, what we mean is actually the actual surface of the kidney itself is, once you peel off all the fat and everything, you have, it's made up of a bunch of small lobes that are attached together. Each one of them is shaped like a grape, and therefore the idea would be that if the kidney shrank, but it's still the size of at least one of those pieces. The postman, by the way, points out an interesting point. How would you tell whether the kidney shrank versus whether originally it was born with small, with extra small kidneys? And so they talk about what you do is there's an area in the body. There's like a capsule full of fat that the kidneys sit inside it. So you want to take a look and see what does that look like? If it looks like tapey stretched over the kidneys and exactly fits them, then it means the kidneys to begin with were small like this, and then the animal is taller. On the other hand, if you see that it's shrunken, then it means the kidneys were originally larger and then they shrank. Then you're going to have to look at the sizes that the Gemara says over here to see whether the animal is still kosher. Next, the Mishnah had said nitzal lechi atasman. The Mishnah had said that if the lower jaw of the animal was removed. That this would apply that the animal is still kosher only if you can force feed the animal. So if you think of it, without a lower jaw, it's not going to be able to eat naturally. So, but if you're able to stick the food far enough down its throat that it will swallow it, that's beyond the point where it can regurgitate it. So if you can feed it, le'ita and hamra are both ways of feeding the animal. Le'ita would be that you put it far down enough, but it's still able to regurgitate it if necessary. Hamra would be where you stick it even further down, where it can't even regurgitate it. So then the animal still has it. But if it can't live in that way, then it's going to be treifa, because then it's not going to be able to eat, then inevitably it's going to die. This whole part, these whole two lines are in parenthesis. And the poskim don't actually bring this point. In fact, when the Chachmin Luno asked the Rambam about the din with the upper jaw being removed that they talked about before, they were under the impression, they wrote to the Rambam that as far as they know, the reason an animal might be treifa conceivably if the lower jaw is removed, well, then why the Mishnah is saying it's not a problem is because it might affect the simonim. And the Rambam explains that has nothing to do with the simonim. It's far away from them. But in any case, the Rishonim point out that these two lines over here are actually something from the Gaonim. So it would be a note that one of the times the Gaonim was written on the side of the Gemara, that one of the Gaonim had taught his Talmidim, and then, as we often have in manuscripts, it accidentally got incorporated into the Gemara itself. Next, the Mishnah had said Nitlah Ha'emishalah. We said if the womb of the animal was removed, then it's not Tefah. So the Gemara says Tana. We learn in a Braisa, you should know this body part has several different parts. He ha'aim. Our Mishnah calls it the aim. He tarpachas. There's a Braisa that we're going to learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that calls it by a different name, tarpachas. The he shalpuchis, and it's also called earlier in the Perek, we also called it shalpuchis, which means the pouch. So each one of them, each all of those are different names all those are different names for the same body part. With that said, Tosfos had brought earlier in the Perek that the word shalpuchis may also include the urinary bladder, and therefore the implication would be, since we had said before that if the shalpuchis was removed, the animal is kosher, then Tosfos had discussed before that that might mean also that if the urinary bladder was removed, the animal is also still kosher. Again, that might fit very nicely with this that we were talking about, that if the kidneys were removed, the animal is kosher, because then in that case, the animal will filter its blood in other ways. Next, we said in the mission of a charusa b'deshamayim, another case where the animal is kosher, is where it's charusa by natural causes, by the hands of Hashem. Charusa means that the lung has shriveled up because the animal got terrified by such. So, the Gemara says, turn on the bottom, we learn in a b'raisa. Ezehi charusa. First of all, what does charusa mean? Kosher samka rea shalach, it means where the lung shriveled up and became hard, so it almost looks dry, but the reason was because the animal was frightened by something. So, b'dei shamayim, if it happened because of something natural, for example, the animal was frightened by hail or by thunder or whatever, so that kind of thing. So, Rashi points out, by the way, the word samka means to shrivel. So here, the lung shrivels, so charusa means that the lung shriveled, the word charusa means hard, so it means the lung shriveled and became hard. If it was b'dei shamayim, if it was because of natural causes, for example, hail or thunder or something, then the animal is still kosher. B'dei adam, but it happened through human agency, so Rashi says, somebody's frightened it. The Rambam gives an example, let's say you took another animal and shechted it in front of this one. So now trefa, then it's going to be trefa because that's not going to recover. Reb Shimon Elazar says not only if it was b'dei adam, but also Reb Shimon Elazar says after b'dei kol abrius, also if it happened by any other creature. For example, let's say it was frightened by a lion. Now the question is, what is Reb Shimon Elazar referring to? Is he referring to the Tanna Kamma, is he referring back to B'dei Shemayim or B'dei Adam? In other words, is Reb Shimon Elazar saying B'dei Shemayim or by wild animals? Or does he mean B'dei Adam or by wild animals? So he borrowed the host, and we ask the question, Reb Shimon Elazar, Aresha Koi Olakola, is he going on the Resha and then he's being natal? He's saying not only if it was because of hail or thunder, but also because, for example, of a lion roaring, in that case, also the animal will recover. Oh yeah, Seifa, Koyo Lachumra, or maybe he's referring to the Seifa, and therefore he's and therefore he'd be Machmir. So he would say, in other words, for Zambi De Odam, or by a wild animal, either way the animal is not going to recover, and therefore it would be Trefa. So how do we understand Rav Shimon Elazar? So the Gemara says, Toshma, we have another Braisa, the time, Harusa Bide Odam Trefa, if this happened by human agency of Trefa, Rav Shimon Elazar, and Ma'afi De Kolabrias, and Rav Shimon Elazar says also by any other creature. So now the Braisa doesn't say anything about B'dei Shemayim. Therefore it's clear that Reb Shimon Elazar is referring to the Seifa. He's saying if it's B'dei Adam, it's Seifa, and not only B'dei Adam, but also by wild animals. So the only way, according to Reb Shimon Elazar, that the animal would be kosher is only if the fright and the shriveling of the lung happened because purely B'dei Shemayim, namely because of hail or thunder or some natural thing like that. Okay. So now, how are we going to tell the difference? The Gemara says, Rabbi Baba Chana have a ka'ozel b'madra. Rabbi Baba Chana was traveling through the desert. Ashka hanu dichri tzomek re'yadidhu. He found there some rams that had shriveled lungs. So he needed to eat, so he took one of these animals and shechted it. And when he opened it up, he found that the lungs were shriveled. The question is, was it b'dei shamayim or b'dei adam? Also shel the medrash. So he came to ask by the best medrash what to do. Omrulay, so they told him, It depends on the season of the year. The kaita, if it's during the summertime, now of course when he came and asked them was one particular time of the year or the other, but the point is, in other words, that they're giving him a general rule that you should know for the future. So if this happens during the summertime, so now you want something that's going to keep, you want to see either way. In other words, the point is we're going to want something to keep the lung at an average temperature. So if it's during the summertime, when it's hot indoors, icing is shifly chivri, then what you want to do is take white voles, because the white will help reflect the sunlight, and they will reflect the sunlight and the heat, and therefore it'll keep the water cold. Fill the bowl with cold water, So we were exactly here. But Coldwater, an interesting point is that the Rishonim discuss doesn't mean that Dafka you have to get them from, doesn't mean that that you have to get them Dafka from a river, or maybe Dafka from a spring, whatever you have. It's similar to like when it comes to the, when it comes to baking matzah, you have to have Mayim Shalom, you have to have cold water, and there also you have what exactly makes it that it should be as cold as possible. In any case, so you take cold water over here, and then put these shriveled lungs in there for 24 hours. And you'll see, Ihadrin Balian, if they become healthy again, they become their normal size again, Videh Shemayim, then you know that what had happened was Videh Shemayim, that they shriveled in the first place, Ukshera, and then the animal is kosher. The Iloy, if not, then it was Videh Adem Utshreif. So that's in the summertime. The Sitra, if it's during the wintertime, so you want to do the other way around. You want to keep them, you want to keep them a little warmer. Basically, the idea is you want to keep them as close as possible to the animal's natural body temperature. So icing shikli chichumi, then you want dark-colored bowls, then you want a dark-colored bowl, which will help, which will absorb more of the heat. And while minim maya pshuri, fill it with lukewarm water, vanchinu meslas, and leave the lung in there for 24 hours. The Rashba adds, you're going to have to make sure the water remains lukewarm that entire 24 hours. So you have to put it someplace where you'll make sure that it stays lukewarm. And again, yihadra bau yakshera, if the lung recovers its normal size and shape, shera, then it's kosher. V'yiloi tref, and if not, then it means that the original fright was bidei adam, and therefore the animal is going to be tref. So that's how you can tell. Okay. Next, the Mishnah said, "Agluda." We have a case of an animal whose skin has been stripped off. So we said, "Rameo says it's kosher." The Chum says, "Possible." So the Gemara says, "Tana Rabbanan, Agluda." Rameo makshav the Chum poslin. So we have a Braisa where also Rameo says that the animal is kosher. The Chum say that it'll be possible, that it'll be treif. And the Braisa continues, "Uchvar heid elozer safra the yirchanim and gudgada." Elazar Safra and Yochanan ben Gudgada gave eders in front of the Chachamim ala gluda about an animal that skin is stripped off shepsula that it's going to be possible it's going to be treif. Omer of Shimon Elazar said of Shimon Elazar when he hears this says because of Reb Meir, evidently then Reb Meir must have changed his mind. Not that he heard it necessarily. Reb Shimon Elazar just says you should know. In a later generation, Reb Shimon Elazar says you should know that a mayor himself changed his mind and held that after all the animal is treifa in a case like that. So the Gemara says Mikval the Reb Shimon Elazar polyed Reb Meir with Glora. So that implies that so does that imply that Reb Shimon Elazar held that originally there was a machlokas and now he's saying Reb Meir changed his mind. The problem with that for Altanya, Reb Shimon Elazar, that Reb Shimon Elazar says in another Braisa, Loi nechluku Reb Meir v'cham ala gluda shepsula. The Reb Meir and the Chacham do not agree about an animal that's missing its skin that's posel. In fact, Reb Oshia, the son of Reb Yehuda, the spice dealer, gave testimony in front of Reb Akiva, Meshum Reb Tarifin, saying in the name of Reb Tarifin, that an animal that skin is stripped off is psula, and only the nishtaya bird kisela, only if you have skin left the size of a sela coin, ksheda, then the animal is kosher because then eventually the skin will regenerate from that. So in other words, according to Reb Shimon Elazar, it comes out that a mayor held to begin with that the animal is treifa if it's gluda. So why is he saying the mayor changed his mind, implying that he holds that a mayor did in fact hold that originally that it was kosher? And the answer is myla nechliku. What does he mean when he says in this last brayser that they didn't have machlokas? Means they did have machlokas to begin with. But like Omer, Reb Meir machlokas say Reb Meir did not continue with his machlokas. He eventually conceded to the chachamim. So fine, at one point there was a machlokas, Reb Meir and the Chachamim, but we said various Chachamim gave eders in front of the other Chachamim that in fact it is possible, and eventually Reb Meir himself changed his mind and agreed with all of them that it is possible. Okay, well, Omamar, we said in the Steyerbreaker Sela Ksheira, we said if there's a Sela size left of the skin that's kosher, Hecha, where exactly does that Sela size have to be? Now, why should we assume that it has to be in a particular place? Maybe we should just say that anywhere it is. So the Osameach explains that because the Gemara is going to explain soon, you have different opinions whether you need a special place, but But so because the Gemara is going to quote soon, then he's going to say in the name of Shmuel that there's a certain place, and then we're going to have other opinions that say there's no special place, that anywhere where it is a cellar. So now Rabbi Yehuda, though, is going to ask that the so Rabbi Yehuda is asking as an introduction to what he's going to say. Omer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shmuel al pnei ha-shed rakula. It means along the entire length of the spine. In other words, the Or Sameach is explaining it's not the stomach the Gemara had asked the question, and Rabbi Yehuda comes forth with the answer. It's rather Rabbi Yehuda himself is asking the question as an introduction to the answer that he's going to give. So the Gemara says, Yibori Lahu. So now we have a question. The Arich Rekotin, when we say that there has to be a Sela, doesn't mean that it's just the area of a Sela altogether, to keep it Tzadaf Lo Havi Kesela. So if you combine together, if you measure that entire area of intact skin, it will equal up to the size of a Sela. Or maybe it means it has to be the width of the cellar across the whole, along the whole length of the spine. The Gemara says, Toshma, the Parash of Neroi, Mishmei de Shmuel, Rab Nehoroi, Tzuyudi explained, the name of Shmuel, Veroich of the cellar, Apnei Kalashed Rekula, it has to be a cellar's width along the whole length of the back. So it's not just enough that it's the area of a cellar total, it has to be the width of the cellar and the length of the back. That's one opinion. Rabbi Baba Chana Omar, Rabbi Baba Chana says that it's not the spine, or not only the spine where you have to have the intact skin, roshe prokin. You have to have that there should be intact skin on the tips of the joints. So in other words, it would have to be not only along the spine where you have the joints between one vertebra and another, but also on the joints between the different parts of the leg. Each of those places, you would have to have a size of a cella of intact skin. And the Gemara continues. Rabbi Lozman, Antignus, Nishum, Rabbi Lozman, Rabbi Yana, Omar. A third opinion, Makam Tiburai, the place where you need a cella is at the navel of the end. So in practice, the posts can talk about, because we have these different opinions and we're not sure who the halacha is like, and therefore you would end up needing all of them. Well, the Gemara asks, Boy Rabbi Yana, Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Yana, the son of Rabbi Shmuel, asks. What about the other way around? Nito mokam hashedra v'kulei kayim. What about if the skin along the spine is missing, but all the rest of the skin is intact? Are we saying, in other words, that that skin is particularly vital to the animal's life, and therefore, if that's missing, then already the animal is tzeifa, even though it has skin on the rest of its body? Or would we say that not? Or would we say that as long as you have the rest of the skin, then the skin over there on the back missing is not a problem? Similarly, nitam mokum tiburai. Similarly, according to Rabbi Lozman Antignus in the name of Rabbi Lozman Yanai, where he said it has to be on the navel. Same thing. What if the skin is missing? We mokum tiburai. Only the area of the navel, the kolokayim, and all the rest of the skin is intact. And similarly, according to Rabbi Avachana, nitla roshet krufim, the kolokayim. What about if the skin on the joints is missing and all the rest of the skin is intact? My, what would be the din? So the Gemara says, teiku. And then we have to declare it teiku. We have to say there that misafik the animal is going to be osur because we can't be sure. And as usual, it's a safik daraisa, and safik daraisa we go the chumra. The Rambam mentions actually the Rambam has a shita we've talked about before that really when it comes to many cases of treifus we can actually say that we can sometimes say that we are meikel only with things of drusa. We said because drusa we said. Is actually explicitly in the Torah, and therefore we would say that and therefore we have to be machmer over there. But when it comes to other kinds of things, the Rambam holds that often we can be meikel. So he says it seems to me that would be maturate. In other words, he says this would be one of those kinds of cases where even though there's a suffix, then nevertheless we would still declare it kosher because the suffix in something other than Jerusalem. And again, according to the Rambam's shita, he consistently holds that in such cases you can be maturate. In Shulchan Aruch,
And the Mechaber also holds like the Rambam. On the other hand, the Rambam says that no, if it's missing, so actually the Mechaber says if it's missing from one of these places or another one, then it would be mutter. In other words, the idea would be because after all, we have three different opinions in the Gemara, and it's a suffix who the halacha is like. So now, if you only have one of them is missing, then based on that suffix, we can say anyway it's a suffix whether it's even a problem according to them, let alone whether the halacha is like that opinion or the other, so therefore we say it's kosher. So that Amar adds, if it's removed from all three, then it would be tshefa, because in fact the halacha is going to be like one of the three of them, and therefore we would have to be concerned that the halacha, that they mean that even if only that is missing, then the animal is already tshefa. The Shulchan Aruch, by the way, brings an interesting point in that connection as well. As far as we're talking about gluda, we're talking about as far as if an animal is missing its skin, what about by a bird? The equivalent would be if its feathers are missing. So the Mechaber says that it would be kosher even if the feathers are fallen out. The Ramah says that Ramah brings yesh oisim, that the Baal Amor holds that it actually would, the Baal Amor, and somebody showing him hold it would actually be tshefa. However, the Ramah says that would only be, first of all, only if all the feathers fell out, and second of all, not if, for example, if, for example, the feathers fell out because the bird is particularly fat, and therefore it lost all its feathers, then the Ramah says that's not a reason to declare it tshefa, and then it would still be kosher, despite the fact that it's missing all its feathers. So the only case where it would be kosher, says the Ramah, would be if all the feathers fell out, not because of fat, but because of whatever it is, because of disease or whatever, then we would consider that the equivalent of gluda, and we would say the bird is tshefa. And again, according to the Mechaber, it doesn't matter, and the feathers don't matter at all.